So from Luke chapter 7, beginning at the first verse, after Jesus had finished all his sayings, he's been teaching big crowds of people. After Jesus had finished all his sayings in the hearing of the people, he entered Capernaum. A centurion there had a slave whom he valued highly and who was ill and close to death. When he heard about Jesus, he sent some Jewish elders to him, asking him to come and heal his slave. When they came to Jesus, they appealed to him earnestly, saying, "He is worthy of having you do this for him, for he loves our people, and it is he who built our synagogue for us." And Jesus went with them, but when he was not far from the house, the centurion sent friends to say to him, Lord, do not trouble yourself, for I am not worthy to have you come under my roof. Therefore, I did not presume to come to you, but only speak the word, and let my servant be healed. For I also am a man set under authority, with soldiers under me, and I say to one, go, and he goes, and to another, come, and he comes, and to my slave, do this, and the slave does it. When Jesus heard this, he was amazed at him, and turning to the crowd that followed him, he said, I tell you, not even in Israel have I found such faith. When those who had been sent returned to the house, they found the slave in good health. Soon afterwards, he went to a town called Nain, and his disciples and a large crowd went with him. As he approached the gate of the town, a man who had died was being carried out. He was his mother's only son, and she was a widow, and with her was a large crowd from the town. When the Lord saw her, he had compassion for her and said to her, do not weep. Then he came forward and touched the bier, and the bearers stood still. And he said, young man, I say to you, rise. The dead man sat up and began to speak, and Jesus gave him to his mother. Fear seized all of them, and they glorified God, saying, a great prophet has risen among us, and God has looked favorably on his people. This word about him spread throughout Judea and throughout all the surrounding country. Jesus is at work where you least expect it. If you remember a few weeks ago, we saw how Jesus' hometown crowd was really miffed at him because he didn't bring his healing powers into their community. But now he's called his disciples together. This is a kind of ragtag group of followers that he's beginning to very intentionally mentor. These are the ones who are going to carry out his rabbinic teachings, right? But all kinds of other people are listening in on the teaching whenever they get the chance. People have started to come from miles around to hear Jesus, to watch what he's up to, whether it's out of kind of an excitement and curiosity as the news of Jesus' ministry starts to spread, or whether it's out of skepticism and kind of a desire to rein in this radical rabbi that's out teaching in the countryside. And he's just come away, as Luke tells us, he's been sharing all of these sayings with the people. He's just had what Luke refers to as his Sermon on the Plain. Other gospel writers talk about Jesus preaching from the mountaintop. In Luke, it's not a mountain, it's just on the plain, but it's a lot of the same teachings. And these sayings that Luke is referring to are sayings about a very surprising reversal that Jesus is preaching. He's preaching about a world that's going to be turned upside down, where the poor will be blessed, where those who are weeping will laugh, where the rich will be humbled. This is like huge news to the community, and they're hanging on every word of his. And then his sermon comes to life right in front of the very people who have been listening to his preaching. This Roman centurion, who is a man of some status in the community. He's wealthy enough to be a slave owner. He's a man who's got authority, commanding 100 troops under him. He's savvy in the political arena as a Roman. He's a political insider. But this man, in the story that Luke tells us, humbles himself to ask for Jesus' help. This powerful, wealthy man sought out the help of an itinerant Jewish rabbi because he has some faith that Jesus can help him. He has some faith that Jesus will help him. But it's interesting, he's got the faith in Jesus, but the centurion's Jewish friends think that Jesus might help him because of his status. Not only is he a fine, upstanding man in the community, they tell Jesus, but he likes us. This is a guy who crosses boundaries. This is a guy who has relationships with Jewish people when the Romans don't think Jewish people are very hot commodities. And not only does he have good relationships with the Jewish people in the community, he has built a synagogue for them. So these people whose faith he doesn't even share, he's built a house of faith, a house of worship for them to help them grow in their faith. That's not his faith. But interestingly, Jesus sees him as a man of deeper faith than even the Jewish people who bring his need to Jesus. In fact, Jesus says, in this man, I see a deeper faith than any faith I have seen in all of Israel. And Israel, if you remember, that's the chosen people of God. And Jesus is saying, this one Roman centurion, who's probably a pagan, has stronger faith than all of you. Why does he say that? Aren't you curious? Well, I think that maybe it's because the centurion knows that the healing of his beloved slave is something that he cannot accomplish himself. Not all the good actions in the world can bring this slave back to health. The centurion has power, yes, and he can use that power for powerful good. He can use his power to befriend people who are different from him. He can use his power to gift them with something of inestimable value, to make their lives more meaningful and more faithful. But he doesn't have the power to give life, and he knows it. The healing of his servant can only be brought about by the love of a benevolent God. And so the centurion entrusts himself with all humility to Jesus, understanding that Jesus is the one who can carry out the will of God. And the centurion knows how these things work. And the centurion knows that God cares for him and cares about his needs. And he knows that God cares about even his slave's needs. This is the faith that Jesus sees and celebrates, because this Roman centurion knows something to be true about God that even the Jewish people are blind to, and he acts on his belief. That's what faith is. It's acting on a belief you have that hasn't yet been proven to you. But even without faith, Jesus acts. Shortly after he heals the centurion slave, Jesus sees this woman coming out of the main city gates following a funeral bier, and he pays attention. He responds when he sees grief and pain and suffering. Always he takes time, no matter how busy he is, no matter how much he is intending to get to someplace else or do something else. He stops And in an instant, he sees what's going on. He notices that the body on the pier is the body of a young man, not fully developed in the musculature and stature of a grown, middle-aged man. And he sees the woman right behind the pier, and he knows that she's too old to be the wife of the young man on the pier. But he notices the grief that she expresses. He sees the pain and the suffering of this woman, and in her wailing and crying, he knows this woman is not the wife, she's not the aunt, this is the mother of the one who has died. And that pain that he witnesses, he sees, is something that she's bearing all alone. There is no husband next to her, so he knows this woman is widowed. And he sees no other sons beside her. He knows that she is totally alone. And in that moment, his passion goes down into his gut. He feels how awful it is for her that she has lost a son, but practically lost her whole life with the death of this son. And as he walks up to her, I imagine him wiping away his own tears because his feeling with her is so great. That's what compassion is. It's suffering with, and he suffers with her to his core. So imagine him wiping away his own tears as he says to her, "Do not cry." And when he says those words, he reaches up, and to the astonishment of every person who must have been in that funeral procession, he reaches up and touches the bier, entering into that woman's pain and shame, humbling himself, becoming unclean by uniting himself with the dead on her behalf to offer life to her son, and in so doing to restore her life to her. For without a husband and without a son, she was as good as dead. So when the dead man sits up on the funeral bier and begins talking, the people witnessing his resurrection realize they haven't seen just one resurrection. They've seen two people brought back to life. Who is this Messiah? This one who loves so indiscriminately, this one who lowers himself to raise others up. Luke tells us that fear and amazement gripped all of the people who were watching these things take place. Somehow, even if they didn't understand how it had happened or why it had happened, they knew that it was God's power at work through this one. And so instantly they began giving glory to God. I like to think that when we glorify God, we do it not just with our praise, but with how we live our whole lives. That's what glorifies God the most. So I wish so much that we could have seen what happened next in this story instead of moving on to the next town, which we will in Luke's narrative. What happened with this son and his mother? Do you think they went back to just living life the way they always had? I can't imagine that they could do that. Touched by this one, I don't think their lives could ever have been the same. I think if I had been them, I would have wanted to follow Jesus from that day onward. Because once you've been touched by a love like that, you don't ever want to let it go. You don't ever want to be out of the touch of that kind of love and the power that it brings into your life. And the centurion? Luke doesn't tell us any more about him and what happens to him in the future either. But But I have a feeling that that centurion went on doing exactly what he had been doing already, loving and caring for the people all around him with compassion that's born only out of faith, knowing that someone else will care for you out of compassion and love. What else could give you the courage to cross boundaries like he did?